This is The Takeaway. I'm Amy Walter. And we begin today with President Trump's trip to Europe, where he's left American allies confused, frustrated, and on edge.
I'm going to a few hotspots.
First, in Brussels at the NATO summit, he personally attacked German Chancellor Angela Merkel.
Germany is totally controlled by Russia because they will be getting from 60 to 70% of their energy from Russia and a new pipeline. And you tell me if that's appropriate, because I think it's not. And I think it's a very bad thing for NATO, and I don't think it should have happened. And yet we're paying a lot of money to protect.
Then to the United Kingdom, where the red carpet was rolled out for him. But hours later, he slammed Prime Minister Theresa May for her handling of the Brexit crisis in an interview with The Sun, a British tabloid owned by Rupert Murdoch's News Corp.
I did give her my views on what she should do and how she should negotiate. Mm-hmm. And she didn't follow those views. I would actually say she probably went the opposite way.
Trump went on to champion Boris Johnson, who resigned from Theresa May's cabinet just this week. The president said Johnson would be, quote, a great prime minister. But a calm Theresa May affirmed the U.S.-UK relationship in a press conference with President Trump.
The U.K.-U.S. relationship is also defined by the role we play on the world stage. Doing this means making tough calls and sometimes being prepared to say things that others might rather not hear. From the outset, President Trump has been clear about how he sees the challenges we face, and on many we agree.
When Trump was asked repeatedly about his comments to The Sun, he downplayed their differences.
No, I said very good things about her. I didn't think they put it in, but that's all right. They didn't put it in the headline. I wish they put that in the headline. That's one of those things. And she's a total professional, because when I saw her this morning, I said, I want to apologize because I said such good things about you. She said, don't worry, it's only the press.
And reiterated comments he did make to The Sun that immigration is bad for Europe.
I think they better watch themselves, because you are changing culture. You are changing a lot of things. You're changing security. Look at what's happening. I mean, you take a look. I mean, look at what's happening to different countries that never had difficulty, never had problems. It's a very sad situation. It's very unfortunate. But I do not think it's good for Europe, and I don't think it's good for our country.
Theresa May's response?
The UK has a proud history of welcoming people who are fleeing persecution to our country. We have a proud history of welcoming people who want to come to our country to contribute to our economy and contribute to our society. And over the years, overall immigration has been good for the UK.
Next, he's off to Helsinki for a one-on-one sit-down with Russian President Vladimir Putin, a man he says is just fine.
Be prepared, you know, President Putin is KGB and this and that. You know what? Putin's fine. He's fine. We're all fine with people.
Maybe former CIA director and defense secretary Leon Panetta put it best.
Where the hell are we going with this? What is the long-term strategy?
We're all fine with people.
With me to help explain all of this is Nicholas Burns, former ambassador to NATO between 2001 and 2005. And Susan Glasser, staff writer at The New Yorker. Welcome to you both.
Thanks, Amy.
Thanks so much.
Let me start with this. The New York Times op-ed today, Trump got from NATO everything Obama ever asked for. Your response to that?
Well, it's well done trolling on the part of The New York Times, because as we know, Donald Trump likes to think of himself as the un-Obama, and the easiest way, according to his staff, to get him to do something or to undo something is to tell him that Barack Obama did it. And yet, of course, Barack Obama supported and did nudge the NATO allies to spend more of their budgets on the military and to basically bulk up the NATO defense. Why did he do that? Because of the aggression from a really revisionist power in Russia, where you have this incredible contradictory situation right now, where Donald Trump is headed to Helsinki to meet with Vladimir Putin. He spent the last couple years basically sucking up to Vladimir Putin, at the same time proclaiming that he and only he can make NATO tougher. Against what is the question, right? So it's a well-done piece of trolling on the part of the New York Times.
So Nicholas Burns, the president, of course, said, well, look, I got them to say and agree to spending a whole lot more money. That's what I came to do. Win.
He didn't have to do that. For four consecutive years, as Susan has said, NATO's increased its defense budget. Every single ally has increased it. The great majority of allies are on track to reach this magical figure of 2% of GDP by 2024. The president could have walked into Brussels and had a peaceful, no-drama summit. He could have taken a lot of credit because there are two people who produce the defense budget increases: Vladimir Putin, because of his annexation of Crimea, and Donald Trump. You have to give him his credit. He's been pushing hard. The Europeans have responded. The alliance is in Afghanistan. Most of these countries are fighting the Islamic State with us. We're containing Putin in Eastern Europe through deploying battalions of troops there to Eastern Europe. The alliance is really working. But Trump decided to blow up the summit and threatened to leave, and he was petulant, and it ruined it. Because the key thing about NATO is Putin needs to believe that the American leader means what he says about defending smaller countries in Eastern Europe. I don't think that Putin believes that any longer, given what Trump has just done.
You were just in Europe a couple weeks ago, and you wrote that it's been shocking to see how far from grace the U.S. has fallen in the eyes of its allies.
Yeah.
Do you think that significant damage has been done, that even post-Trump, the U.S. is going to have a different relationship with our allies?
I don't think it's permanent, because what binds us together is the fact that we are this big democratic space that needs protection, military protection, and the United States is the major protector. But look at the public opinion polls.
Yeah.
42% of Germans say they don't want the United States to be in NATO anymore. And there's a battle underway in Europe between the democracies and the right-wing anti-democratic populists. What I heard over and over again from ministers of government is that Trump is siding with the anti-democrats in Hungary, in Poland, in Italy. And look at what he's doing in attacking Angela Merkel and trying to subvert her, and now attacking the Prime Minister of the UK. This is what the Europeans are furious about.
That is absolutely what I have heard on the last few trips that I've made to Europe as well this spring and earlier this summer. And more Germans in one shocking poll recently said that they trusted Vladimir Putin than Donald Trump. But my slight footnote or asterisk to this idea that the relationship can recover is, you know, I'm hearing from a lot of people, well, we can survive one term of Donald Trump. We don't know what two terms will do. And also, I think there is a sense that the Europeans, in particular the Germans, were slow to understand the nature of the threat that Trump would pose, not just to the European system rhetorically, but in actuality, and therefore slow to respond to it. They had a hard time taking it seriously, I think. And the result is that they're not very well positioned to respond to any of Trump's taunts and insults, because they have a hard time processing. When I was there in May, in fact, a number of senior German officials were talking to me almost as if this was like a family crisis. And they said, in the post-World War II context of what the United States has done to build up West Germany and to support it, they said, it's like your father doesn't love you anymore, mm-hmm. and maybe now he's going to beat you.
Oh, that's sort of grim. And speaking of Angela Merkel and Theresa May, the president goes to Brussels, personally attacks Angela Merkel, is in the UK within about 5 minutes, trashes Theresa May. Why did he do this?
Well, once again, here we are spending our days trying to get inside the head of Donald Trump, which in and of itself, by the way, I think is a commentary on the state of our democracy. But to get to your question, he has a personal animus, it seems to me, in particular towards Chancellor Angela Merkel in Germany. He has, from the very start, taken out after her, insulted her. You know, he's even started tweeting about her in ways that seem to want to undermine her politically, directly. Sensing weakness, he's moving in. Now he seems to be doing that to the nth degree against Theresa May. I can't think of a comparable act of boorishness on the part of an American leader being a guest in another country and attacking the host in such a manner. It's just, you know, I know every day we're looking for adjectives to describe it, but this one is really over the top. Is it because they're both women leaders? Well, we know how he feels about Hillary Clinton and the terms in which he has used to describe other women in public life. But clearly it's beyond that as well. I think it goes to Ambassador Burns' point that it's something about the system and those who are pushing back in any way against his preferred outcomes.
Is this completely unprecedented? Have we ever seen a United States president overseas insert himself in the domestic politics of another country in this way, of our allies?
Well, there have been examples where American President Barack Obama went to the United Kingdom and
said, asserted, don't do Brexit.
Don't do Brexit. A lot of people thought that was unwise. Mm-hmm. You know, none of us here are psychiatrists, but Donald Trump, he seems to be driven by anger, and he lashes out at successful people and successful countries. He embraces Kim Jong-un and Xi Jinping and Putin, but he stiff arms Angela Merkel. She's been successful, the manufacturing economy. He resents that because he's a zero-sum guy. If she's winning, if German cars are being exported, then something is wrong. And it may be as elementary as that, and it's foolish to have that attitude in a globalized economy. It hurts the United States to have this mindset. He is weakening us, left and right.
Susan, I know you're going to Helsinki. Talk to us a little bit about what the expectations are from Putin's end. What does he want to get out of this?
Well, you know, it's a good question. You know, I consulted with almost 24 sort of Russia hands I've gotten to know and benefited from their wisdom. What I was really struck by writing my column this week in The New Yorker was how unified they are in a way that I'd never seen. You know, that this is a group that has feuded over how to handle Putin. It's not an easy challenge. There's hawks, there's doves. I asked them a few questions. Every single one said, number one, there is no historical precedent for a meeting like this.
Meaning one-on-one without anybody else in the room?
Well, meaning A, so hastily pulled together with no agenda. Number two, in the context of an American president who seems so plaintive almost and courting of the Russian leaders, it was Trump himself, people forget this, who initiated this meeting in March in the famous, now famous, do not congratulate phone call, in which not only did he congratulate Vladimir Putin on his winning another 6-year term of the presidency, but he actually even invited Putin to the White House. Then the White House didn't put that out. I think what really happened is that the Kim Jong-un summit in Singapore, the president loved that so much. He loved the glare of publicity. He loved proclaiming, you know, the deal of the century, even though there appears to be not much of a deal. It's only 2 weeks between the time when this summit meeting was set in Helsinki and when it's actually taking place.
And the other unprecedented thing, Ambassador Burns, is the fact that the president and members of his campaign team are still under investigation by Mueller about Russian interference in the election. What does that say, right? The fact that the president now is sitting down one-on-one with Putin with no one else around at the same time that there's a special counsel investigating the relationship between Russia and the president's campaign.
Well, that investigation is hanging over Donald Trump and the administration. And you'd think that the normal reaction by an administration like this would be to be super cautious and not to give any kind of indication that the president has a relationship with Putin that we should not want him to have. So in my experience with the U.S.-Russian and U.S.-Soviet summits, you always want to have a note taker in the room simply because you want to understand exactly what happened, what was said, in what order, what commitments were made. You'd at least have to have a note taker. The National Security Advisor is always in the room. I worked at the White House for 5 years for President Bush 41 and President Clinton on Russia. Lots of summits. They never had one-on-one conversations. You always need a record of it. The other thing I'd say was so indicative of how important language is. When the president talks about Putin, he talks about, I want to get along. Can't we be friends? Will he like me? The point of diplomacy is not to be liked and it's not to get along. It's actually just to protect your country and seek advantages for your country or for the issues that you care about. It doesn't matter if they get along. What matters is that the United States emerges stronger and our allies emerge stronger. When he talks about Theresa May or Sadiq Khan, the mayor of London, whom he routinely criticizes, or Angela Merkel, it's very different language. It's confrontational. It's critical. It's domineering. I know a lot of people have gone here, but I have to go here too. When he embraces Kim Jong-un and Xi Jinping and Rodrigo Duterte and Vladimir Putin and stiff arms the democratic leaders of the world, Justin Trudeau and the Europeans, there's something profoundly disturbing about his worldview and the way he thinks about how America should present itself and protect its interests in the world.
Nicholas Burns was the U.S. ambassador to NATO between 2001 and 2005. He's now professor at the Harvard Kennedy School of Government. And Susan Glasser is a staff writer for The New Yorker. Thanks to you both.
Thanks, Amy.
Great to be with you.